calling. Some never get beyond the rank of acolyte, even though they may want to. Sometimes acolytes want to be a Zelandani so much, they try to claim a false call, or even feign one, but they are invariably rejected. One who has been through the ordeal knows the difference. It has made some acolytes, and former acolytes, very bitter.
What else is required to become a Zelandani?
Jondalar pressed.
And what is especially needed to be the one who is first?
The rest were happy to let him do the asking, though some of them, such as Marthona, who was once an acolyte herself, knew most of the requirements. Few of the others who were there had ever had their questions to Zelandani answered so directly. To become one of the Zelandanya, one must memorize all the histories and elder legends, and have a good comprehension of their meaning. One must know the counting words and how to use them, the coming of the seasons, the phases of the moon, and some things that are only for the Zelandanya to know. But perhaps most important, one must be able to visit the world of the spirits, Zelandani said. That is why one must truly be called. Most Zelandanya know from the beginning who will be first and who is most likely to be the next one. The first time one feels the call to venture into the spirit world, it may be revealed. Being first is also a calling, and not a calling every Zelandani wants.
What is it like, the spirit world? Is it frightening? Are you afraid when you have to go there?
He asked next. Jondalar, no one can describe the spirit world to one who has never been there. And yes, it is frightening, especially the first time. It never entirely ceases to be frightening, but with meditation and preparation, it can be controlled, along with the knowledge that the Zelandanya, and particularly the cave, is there to help. Without the help of the people of one's cave, it could be difficult to return, she explained.
But if it's frightening, why do you do it?
Jondalar asked. There is no way to refuse it. Ayla suddenly felt a chilling cold and shuddered. Many try to fight it, and some succeed for a while, the Danyar continued. But in the end, the mother will have her way. It is best to go prepared. The dangers are never kept from one who may think to venture in that direction. That is why the initiation can be so grueling. The test on the other side is even worse. You may feel that you are torn apart, scattered to the whirlwind and the dark unknown. Some go and never return to their body. Some who do return leave part of themselves behind, and they are never quite right afterwards. But no one can go and remain unchanged, and once you get the call, you must accept it, and the duties and responsibilities along with it. I think that's why so few of the Zelandanya are mated. There are no restrictions on mating or having children, but it is much like being a leader. It can be difficult to find a mate who is willing to live with someone who has so many demands made on them. Isn't that right, Marthona?
Zelandani asked.
Yes, Zelandani, she answered. Then she smiled at Dalinar before turning to her son. Why do you think Dalinar and I severed the knot, Jondalar? We talked about it the day after your mating. It was more than his urge to travel. Willemar has that, too. In many ways, Dalinar and I were too much alike. He's happy now that he's leader of his own cave, his own people, really. But it took him a while to understand that was what he really wanted. He fought the responsibility for a long time, but I think that was why he was drawn to me in the first place. Jaconan had died, and I was already leader when we mated. We were very happy at first, but he became restless. It was for the best that we parted. Jerrica is the right woman for him. She is strong-willed, and he needs a strong woman, but Dalinar is leader.
The two she mentioned looked at each other and smiled. Then Dalinar reached for Jerrica's hand.
Los Aduna is the one who serves for the people who live on the other side of the glacier. He has a mate, and his mate has four children. She seems very happy,
Ayla interjected.
She had been listening to Zelandani with a fascination that was akin to fear.
Los Aduna is fortunate to have found a woman like her, just as I was fortunate to find Willemar, Marthona said. I was very reluctant to mate again, but I'm glad he persisted.
She turned to smile at him. I suppose that's one reason I finally passed on the leadership. I was leader for many years with Willemar beside me, and we never had a problem over it. But I grew tired of the demands. I wanted some time to myself, and I wanted to have some time to share with Willemar. After Falara came along, I wanted to be a mother again. Joharan seemed to have the potential, so I started to prepare him, and when he was old enough, I was glad to pass the responsibility on to him. He's very much like Jaconan. I'm sure he's the son of Jaconan's spirit.
She smiled at her eldest son. I still keep a hand in. Joharan often consults with me, though I think he does it for my sake, not his.
That's not true, Mother. I value your advice, Joharan said. Did you love Dalinar very much, Mother? Jondalar asked. You know there are songs and stories about your love.
He had heard them, but he'd often wondered if it was really so strong. How could they have parted?
Yes, I loved him, Jondalar. A small part of me still does. It's not easy to forget someone you've loved that much, and I'm glad we're still friends. I think we're better friends now than when we were mated.
She noticed her elder son.
I still love Jaconan, too. His memory remains with me and reminds me of when I was a young woman and in love for the first time, even though it took him a while to decide what he wanted, she added rather cryptically.
Jondalar remembered the story he had heard about his mother on his journey.
You mean between you and Bodoa, or both? He asked.
Bodoa? I haven't heard that name in a long time, Zelandani said. Isn't she the foreign woman who was being trained by the Zelandanya? From some eastern people. What were they called? Sard. Something.
Sarmunai, Jondalar said.
That's it. I was still young when she left, but it said she was quite skilled, Zelandani said.
She is Sarmuna now. Ayla and I met her on our journey. The Sarmunai wolf women captured me, and Ayla followed their trail and came after me. We were lucky to get away from them alive. If it hadn't been for Wolf, I don't think either one of us would be here. You can imagine how surprised I was to find someone among those people who not only knew how to speak Zelandanyi, but knew my mother.
What happened? Several people asked. Jondalar briefly related the story of the cruel woman at Aroa and the Sarmunai camp she had perverted.
Although Sarmuna helped at Aroa in the beginning, she regretted it and finally decided to help her people and try to correct the problems at Aroa caused.
Everyone shook their heads in wonder. That's the most outlandish story I've ever heard, Zelandani said. But it shows what can happen when a Danyer becomes warped. I think Bodoa could have gone far if she hadn't abused her power. It's lucky for her that she finally came to her senses. It is said one who serves the mother will pay in the next world if they misuse their power in this one. That's one reason the Zelandanya are so careful about whom they accept. There is no turning back. It's one way we are different from leaders of a cave. A Zelandani is a Zelandani for life. Even if we may sometimes want to, we cannot drop the burden.
Everyone was quiet for a while, thinking about the story Jondalar had told.
They looked up when Ramara came by.
I'm supposed to let you know, Joharan, that they brought the rhino in. Jondalar gets credit. It was his spear that killed him.
I'm glad to hear that. Thank you, Ramara.
Ramara would have liked to stay and hear what everyone was talking about, but she did have other things to do, and she wasn't specifically invited, although no one would have told her to go.
You have first choice, Jondalar, Joharan said after she left. Are you going to take the horn?
I don't think so. I'd rather have the fur.
Tell me what happened out there with that rhino, Joharan asked.
Jondalar told how they happened to see the young men baiting the woolly rhinoceros and stopped to watch.
I didn't realize how young they were until after the accident. I don't think they wanted the rhino as much as they wanted admiration and praise, and to be the envy of their friends. None of them had any experience with rhinos, and not much with hunting. They shouldn't have tried to get one on their own.
This was a hard way for them to learn that hunting rhinos, or any animal, is not really a game.
But it is true that if they had brought in that woolly rhinoceros by themselves, they would have been highly praised and the envy of their friends, Marthona said. In one sense, this accident, terrible as it was, may help prevent future attempts and even worse tragedies. Think how many youngsters would be trying the same thing if they had succeeded. This way it may make others think again before they attempt such a game, at least for a while. The mother of this young man may suffer and worry, but it may spare other mothers even more grief. I just hope Madigan survives without severe crippling.
As soon as Ayla saw the rhino gore him, she raced to help,
Jandalar said.
It's not the first time she's rushed into a dangerous situation when someone is hurt, but she worries me sometimes.
He was very lucky that she was there. I'm sure he would be crippled for life or worse if someone hadn't been there who knew what to do, Zelandani said. Then to Ayla. Exactly what did you do first?
Ayla explained in general. Zelandani drew her out for more detail and her reasoning.
In the guise of interested conversation, Zelandani was examining Ayla's knowledge of the healing arts. Though she hadn't mentioned it yet, the one who was first was trying to arrange a formal meeting of the Zelandanya so they could learn the extent of Ayla's training, but she was glad for this opportunity to question her alone first. It was unfortunate for poor Madigan, but Zelandani was glad for this demonstration of her skills to the whole summer meeting. It gave her this opportunity to begin to approach the Zelandanya with the idea of her entering into their alliance. Zelandani had already reevaluated her first impression several times, but now she looked at the young woman in an entirely new light. Ayla was no novice. She was an equal, a true colleague. It was entirely possible that Zelandani might learn a few things from her. Those club moss spores, for example, that was an application Zelandani had not used, but upon reflection, it was probably a good procedure. She was anxious to talk to Ayla alone, to compare ideas and knowledge, and it would be good to have someone to talk with at the Ninth Cave. Zelandani did work with the other Zelandanya in the region and discussed professional matters with colleagues during the summer meetings. She had a couple of acolytes, of course, though she had no serious acolyte interested in healing. To have a true healer within her own cave, especially one who brought new knowledge, that could be very worthwhile.
Ayla, Zelandani said, it might be a good idea to talk to Madigan's family.
I'm not sure I know what to say to them, Ayla said.
They must be worried, and I think they might like to know what happened. I'm sure it would help if you reassure them.
How can I reassure them? Ayla said.
You can say that it is up to the mother now, but there is a chance that he will be all right. Isn't that your opinion?
It's mine, Zelandani said.
I think Donnie smiled on that young man because you happened to be there.
Jandalar stifled a big yawn as he took off his tunic, a new one he had received from his mother at their mating party, woven of threads of the flax plant that she had prepared and woven. She had arranged for someone else to decorate it with some embroidery and beads, but not too much. It was very lightweight and comfortable. She had given a similar one to Ayla, made very full and loose so she could wear it as her pregnancy progressed. Jandalar had put his on immediately, but Ayla was saving hers for later.
"I've never heard Zelandani speak so openly about the Zelandanya," he said as he prepared to get into their sleeping roll. "It was interesting. I never realized how difficult it could be, but I remember her saying whenever she had some test to endure that it had its compensations. I wonder what they are. She didn't talk about it that much."
They lay together in silence for a while. Ayla was tired, she realized, so tired she could hardly think. Between the rhino hunting accident yesterday and staying at the Zelandanya Lodge until late and the mating celebration today, she had slept very little and had been under some strain. She was feeling some pain around her temples and considered getting up and making some willow bark tea for it, but she was too tired to bother.
"And mother,"
Jandalar continued, almost as a verbal continuation of his thoughts.
"I always thought she and Dalinar just decided to separate, I never knew why. I guess you don't always think of your mother as anything but your mother, someone who loves you and takes care of you.
I don't think the separation was easy for her. I think she loved Dalinar very much,
Ayla said.
I can understand why. You are very much like him.
Not in all ways. I never wanted to be a leader. I still don't. I would miss the feel of stone in my hands. There's nothing so satisfying as seeing a perfect blade flake off, one that turned out just the way you planned,
Jandalar said. Dalinar is a flint dapper too, Jandalar,
Ayla said. Yes, the best, but he doesn't get the chance to work at it much anymore. The only one who could match him is Wymez, and he's still back at the lion camp, making beautiful blades for the spears of the mammoth hunters. It's a shame they will never meet. They would have enjoyed learning from each other.
But you've met them both, and you understand the stone as well as anyone. Can't you show Dalinar what you learned from Wymez?
Ayla said. Yes, I've already begun, Jandalar said. Dalinar is as interested as I was. I'm so glad they delayed the matrimonial until the Lands of Danyi could get here. I'm pleased that Joplea and Echazar shared our matrimonial. It's a special tie. I've always felt a deep affection for my cousin, and this brings us closer. I think Joplea was pleased, too.
I'm sure Joplea was pleased to share a matrimonial with you, Jandalar. I think it's something she's always wanted.
And this was as close as she could get to what she really wanted, Ayla added in her own mind.
She did feel sorry for Joplea, but she had to admit she was glad of the prohibition against close cousins mating. Echazar seems very happy.
I think he still couldn't quite believe it. There were a few others who felt the same way, for different reasons,
Jandalar said, putting his arm around her and nuzzling her neck. Echazar loves her almost beyond reason. Such love can compensate for a lot,
Ayla said, fighting to stay awake. He really isn't so ugly when you get used to him. He just looks different, but you can see the clan in him,
Jandalar said. I don't think he's ugly at all. He reminds me of Rydag and Dirk, Ayla said. I think they are handsome people, the clan.
I know you do, and you're right. They are handsome people in their way. You are pretty handsome yourself, woman.
He nuzzled her neck, then kissed her, and could feel his need for her beginning, but he could see she was almost asleep. He knew she wouldn't refuse him if he pressed her. She never did. But this wasn't the time. It would be better when she was rested anyway.
I hope Madigan is going to be all right, Jandalar said as Ayla rolled over and he snuggled against her back.
He wasn't all that tired himself, but he didn't mind holding her. That reminds me, Jandalar.
She rolled back over to look at him.
Zelindani and the fifth Stanyar and I were talking to his mother. We had to tell her that he could have problems. He may be able to walk again, but no one can say for sure.
It would be a shame if he couldn't. He's so young.
We just don't know, of course. But even if he does walk, he may be lame,
Ayla said.
Zelindani asked his mother if he had shown any interest in any skill or craft. The only thing that came to her mind, besides hunting, was that he made his own points for his spears. It made me think of those Sarmunai boys that Ataroa crippled. You were teaching one of them how to nap flint so he could make a life for himself. I told his mother that if it was something he wanted to do, I would ask you if you'd be willing to teach him.
He's from the fifth cave, isn't he?
Jandalar said, thinking over the idea. Yes, but maybe he could come and live at the ninth cave for a while. Didn't Danuch live at a different Mamutoi camp for a year or so to learn more about flint?
Ayla said.
Maybe we could do the same for Madigan.
That's true. Danug had just returned from a year of living with a camp of flint miners, so he could learn about the stone at the source, just as I learned at Dalinar's mine. He couldn't have had a better teacher than Wymez when it came to learning how to work it, but a good napper needs to know the stone, too.
Jandalar's forehead wrinkled as he pondered the implications.
I don't know. I'd be happy to teach him, but I'd have to talk to Joharan about him coming to the ninth cave. The boy would have to have a place to live. Joharan would have to work it out with the fifth cave. That is, if Madigan wants to learn. He may have been making points because he couldn't find anyone else to make them for him, and he wanted to hunt.
We'll see, Ayla. It's a possibility. If he was hurt that badly, he will need to learn some craft.
They both settled down in the firs, but as tired as Ayla was, sleep did not come immediately. She found herself thinking about her future and that of the baby she was carrying. What if it was a boy, and he wanted to bait rhinos? What if something else happened? And where was Wolf? He was almost like a son to her, too, but she hadn't seen him for several days. When she finally went to sleep, she dreamed about babies and wolves and earthquakes. She hated earthquakes. They more than frightened her. They were like a personal harbinger of bad news.
I can't believe some people are still objecting to Joplaya and Echazar getting mated here, Zelindani said.
It's done. They were mated. They've been through their isolation trial. They're affirmed. It's over with. They've even had their mating party. There's nothing more to be said.
The first was having a last cup of tea before returning to the Zelindanya Lodge after spending the night at the camp of the Ninth Cave. Several others were sitting around a large trench fire, finishing their morning meal before the busy activities of the day began.
"They are talking about going home early," Marthona said.
"That would be a shame after coming so far," Jondalar said.
"They have what they came for. Joplaya and Echazar are officially mated, and they have their Zelindani, or rather Lanzadani,"
Willemar said. "I was hoping to spend some time with them. I don't think we'll be seeing them again for a while,"
Jondalar said.
"I was hoping the same," Joharan said. "I've been talking to Dalinar about why he decided to establish the Lanzadanyi as a separate group. It's more than the fact that they live a good distance away. He has some interesting ideas."
"He always did," Marthona said.
"Echazar and Joplaya don't even like to go to the main camp area because they say people stare at them, and the looks are not especially friendly," Falara said.
"They may be feeling a little sensitive since the objections during the matrimonial," Proliva said.
"I've looked into every one. None of those objections has merit. It was all started by Brookaval, of all people. But everyone knows what his problem is," the first said. "And Morona is just trying to make trouble because the Lanzadanyi are related to Jondalar, and she still wants to get back at him and anyone around him.
That woman seems to be training herself in the craft of carrying a grudge," Proliva said. "She needs something to do. Maybe if she had a child it would give her something else to think about."
"I wouldn't wish her as a mother on any child," Salova said.
"Donnie may agree with you," Ramara said. "She's never been blessed as far as anyone knows."
"Isn't she related to you, Ramara? You both have the same pale blonde hair," Falara said.
"She's a cousin, but not a close one," Ramara said.
"I think Proliva is right," Marthona said. "Morona does need something to do, but it doesn't mean she has to have a baby. She should learn a craft of some kind, something to devote herself to that would be worthwhile and that would take her thoughts away from making trouble for people just because her life hasn't turned out the way she wanted. I think all people should have some craft or skill, something that they enjoy, are naturally drawn to, and do well. If she doesn't, she will just continue to make trouble to get attention."
"Even that may not be enough," Soliban said. "Larimar has a skill, one he's recognized and even admired for. He makes good barma, but he's been making all kinds of trouble. He sides with Brookaval about Joplaya and Echazar, and he's getting attention for it, too. I heard him say to some people of the Fifth Cave that Jondalar's hearth shouldn't be among the first anymore, because he mated a foreign woman, and she has the least status. I think he's still resentful that Ayla wasn't behind him at Chevenar's burial. He pretends to ignore it, but I think he doesn't like being last."
"Then he should do something about it," Proliva said angrily, "like take care of the children of his hearth."
"Jondalar's hearth is exactly where it should be," Marthona said with a slight smile of satisfaction. "It was an exceptional situation, and it was decided by the leaders and the Zelindanya, as it should have been.
It's not for someone like Larimar to say.
Perhaps that's the thing to do, the first said. I think I'll talk to Dalinar about having the Zelindania and the leaders gather and talk about this problem over Joplea and Dechazar. Bring it out in the open, and perhaps give those people who feel some objections an opportunity to air their feelings.
That might be a time for Jondalar and Ayla to talk about their experiences with Flatheads, the clan, as she calls them, Joharan said. I've been wanting to have a talk with the other leaders about them anyway.
Perhaps we can go over and talk to him now, Zelindani said. I need to get back to the lodge. I've got a problem. Someone from among the Zelindania is passing around information that is supposed to be kept private. Some of it is very personal information about certain people, and some is knowledge that shouldn't be talked about outside the Zelindania. I need to find out who it is, or at the least put a stop to it. Ayla had been listening very carefully to all that was said, and she thought about it as everyone got up and went in various directions. The people of the Zelindanyi made her think of a river. While the surface might appear calm and smooth, there could be many undercurrents at many different levels. She thought that probably Marthona and Zelindani knew more about what was going on under the surface than most, but she guessed that even they didn't know all of it, not even about each other. She had noted certain expressions, postures, tones of voice that gave her clues about what might be deeper. But as with Zelindani's problem with someone telling things, even after that problem was resolved, there would be something else. The deep currents would shift and slide, leave little ripples on the surface and eddies around the sides. It would never come to an end, as long as there were people.
I'm going to go see the horses, she said to Jondalar. Are you coming, or do you have something else to do?
I'll come with you, but wait a moment, Jondalar said. I want to get the spear thrower and spears I'm making for Lanadar. I'm almost finished with them, and I'd like to test them out, but I'm too big. I was hoping you might be able to do it. I know they'll be small for you, too, but maybe you can get a sense if they'll work for him.
I'm sure they'll be fine, but I'll try them, she said. The best one to know will be Lanadar himself, and he won't even know until he gains some real skill. This will give him something to practice with, and I'm sure he'll be pleased. I have a feeling you're going to make that boy very happy.
The sun was approaching its zenith when they started gathering up their things. They had brushed the horses, and Ayla checked them over carefully. When the season warmed, flying insects often tried to lay eggs in the moist, warm corners of the eyes of various ruminants, deer and horses in particular. Issa had taught her about the clear fluid from the bluish-white plant that was like a dead thing, and that grew in shaded woods. It drew its nourishment from decaying wood, since it lacked the living green chlorophyll of other plants, and its waxy surface turned black when touched. But there was no better treatment for sore or inflamed eyes than the cool liquid that oozed from a broken stem. She had tried out the small spear thrower and decided it would work just fine for Lanadar. Jondalar had finished the spears he was working on, but decided to make a few more when he saw a small stand of straight young alders with slender trunks, just the right diameter for small spears. He cut down several. Ayla wasn't sure what it was that made her want to go into the woods beside the creek beyond the horse enclosure.
"Where are you going, Ayla?" Jondalar asked. "We should be heading back. I need to go to the main camp this afternoon."
"I won't be long," she said.
Jondalar could see her moving through the screen of trees and wondered if she had seen something moving back there. Maybe something that could be a danger to the horses. Maybe he should go with her, he was thinking, when he heard her cry out in a loud scream.
No! Oh, no!
The man raced as fast as his long legs could go toward the sound, crashing through brush and bruising himself, banging into a tree. When he reached her, he cried out a denial, too, and dropped to his knees. Chapter 35 In the mud at the edge of the small stream, Jondalar bent over Ayla. She was lying almost flat beside the large wolf, who was down on his side. She was holding his head in her hands. A torn, bloody ear was staining the back of her hand. Wolf tried to lick her face.
"It's Wolf. He's hurt,"
Ayla said. The tears streaming down her face left white streaks through a muddy smudge on her cheek.
"What do you think happened to him?"
Jandalar asked.
"I don't know, but we've got to help him," she said, sitting up. "We need to make a stretcher to carry him to camp."
Wolf tried to get up when she did, but fell back.
"Stay with him, Ayla. I'll make a stretcher from those spear shafts I just cut,"
Jandalar said. When she and Jandalar brought him in, several people hurried over to see if they could help. It made Ayla understand how many people had come to care about the wolf.
"I'll make a place for him in the lodge," Marthona said, going in ahead of them.
"Is there anything I can do?"
Joharan said. He had just returned to the camp.
"You can find out if Zelindani has any comfrey left from Madigan's injuries. Also, marigold petals. I think Wolf's been in a fight with other wolves, and wounds from bites can be bad. They need strong medicine, and they have to be well cleaned,"
Ayla said.
"Will you need to boil some water?"
Willemar asked. She nodded.
"I'll get a fire going. It's a good thing we just brought in a load of wood."
When Joharan came back from the Zelindania Lodge, Falara and Proliva were with him, and Zelindani had said she would come by shortly. Before long, the entire summer meeting knew that Ayla's wolf was hurt, and most people were concerned. Jandalar stayed with her while she examined the wolf and knew from her expression that his wounds were serious. She was sure he had been attacked by an entire pack, and she was surprised that he was still alive. She asked Proliva for a piece of aurochs meat, scraped it the way she did for baby food, then mixed it with ground datura and put it down his throat to help him relax and make him sleep.
"Jandalar, will you get some of that skin from the unborn calf of the aurochs I killed? I need soft, absorbent hides to clean his wounds,"
Ayla said to Jandalar. Marthona watched her put roots and powders into various bowls of hot water, then handed her some material.
"Zelindani likes to use this," she said.
Ayla looked at it. The soft material was not made from hides. It looked more like the finely woven material that the long tunic Marthona had given her was made of. She dipped it in the water of one of the bowls. The fabric absorbed it quickly.
"This will do very well, in fact. Thank you," Ayla said.
Zelindani arrived about the time that Jandalar and Joharan were helping her turn the wolf over so she could work on his other side. The first worked with Ayla to clean a particularly bad wound. Then Ayla surprised several people when she threaded a thin piece of sinew through the small hole in her thread puller and used it to sew the worst of the wounds together with some strategically placed knots. She had shown the ingenious device to several people, but no one had ever seen it used to sew living skin. She even sewed his torn ear, though it would still have a jagged edge.
"So that's what you did to me,"
Jandalar said with a grim smile.
"It does seem to help to hold the wound together so it can heal properly," Zelindani said. "Is that something you learned from your clan medicine woman, too, to sew skin together?"
"No, Issa never did this. They don't exactly sew, but they do knot things together. They like to use that sharp little bone that is in the lower foreleg of a deer as an awl to pierce holes in skins, and sinew after it's partially dried and hard at the ends to poke through the holes, and then they tie it into knots. They make birch bark containers that way, too. It was when Jandalar's wounds kept sliding apart and opening up, even when I tried to wrap it tight to hold everything together, that I wondered if I could make some knots that would keep his skin and muscles in the right place. So I tried it. It seemed to work, but I wasn't sure how soon to take them out. I didn't want the wounds to tear apart, but I didn't want the knots to heal into his skin either. I might have waited a little too long before I finally cut them. It probably hurt a little more than it should have when I pulled them out," Ayla said.
"You mean that was the first time you sewed someone's wound together?"
Jandalar said.
"You didn't know if it would work, but you tried it out on me?"
He laughed.
"I'm glad you did.
Except for the scars, you would hardly know I was mauled by that lion.
So you invented this technique to sew wounds, Zelandani said. Only someone very skilled and with a natural aptitude for healing and medicine would think of something like that. Ayla, you belong in the Zelandanya. Ayla looked unhappy.
But I don't want to be in the Zelandanya, she said. I appreciate. I mean, please don't misunderstand me. I feel honored, but I just want to be mated to Jandalar and have his baby and be a good Zelandanyi woman.
She avoided looking at the Danyar. Please, don't you misunderstand me, the woman said. It wasn't an offhand offer, made lightly with only a moment's thought, like a casual invitation to a meal. I said, you belong in the Zelandanya. I've thought so for some time. A person with your skill needs to associate with others who have a similar level of knowledge. You like being a healer, don't you?
I am a medicine woman. I cannot change that, Ayla said.
Of course you are. That's not the issue, Ayla, the first said. But among the Zelandanyi, only those who belong to the Zelandanya are healers. People would not be comfortable with a healer who is not. You would not be called upon when a healer is needed if you're not in the Zelandanya. You would not be able to be a medicine woman, as you call it. Why do you resist the Zelandanya?
You've talked about all that must be learned and the time that it takes. How can I be a good mate to Jandalar and take care of my children if I have to spend so much time learning to be a Zelandani? Ayla said.
There are those who serve the mother, who are mated and have children. You yourself told me about the one across the glacier with a mate and several children, and you have met Zelandani of the second cave, the woman said.
There are others, but not very many, Ayla said.
The first observed the young woman closely and was convinced there was more to it than Ayla was saying. Her reasons weren't in character. She was an excellent healer, and she was curious, learned quickly, and obviously enjoyed it. She wouldn't neglect a mate and children, and if there were times that she had to be away, there would always be someone who would help her. If anything, she was almost too attentive. Look how much time she devoted to those animals. But she was usually available and always willing to help whenever anything needed to be done, and she took on more than was required. The first had been impressed with the way she got everyone involved in helping Lanoga to care for her youngest sister and the other children, and the way she was helping the boy with the deformed arm. Those were the kinds of things that a good Zelandani did. She had naturally assumed the role. The Danyar decided that she was going to have to discover her real problem, because one way or another, the first was determined that Ayla was going to be one who served the Great Earth Mother. She had to be brought in. It could pose too great a threat to the stability of the Zelandanya to have someone with her knowledge and innate skills outside of their influence. People smiled when they saw the wolf with bandages tied on him, made of Marthona's fiber material and soft hides, as he walked beside Ayla through the main camp. It made Wolf almost seem to be dressed in human clothing, and he seemed to be a caricature of a fierce, wild meat-eater. Many stopped to ask how he was, or to offer the opinion that he was looking good, but he stayed very close to Ayla. He was so unhappy the first time she left him behind that he howled, then broke loose and found her. Some of the storytellers had already begun to weave tales about the wolf who loved the woman. She had to train him all over again to stay where she told him. He finally did begin to feel comfortable staying with Jandalar or Marthona or Folara, but he also felt defensive about the territory of the camp of the Ninth Cave, and she had to retrain him not to threaten visitors. People, especially those who were close to her, were amazed at Ayla's seemingly unlimited patience with the animal, but they also saw the results. Many of them had thought that it might be interesting to have a wolf that obeyed commands, but they weren't sure it was worth the time and effort.
It did make them understand, though, that her control of her animals wasn't magic. Ayla was beginning to relax, thinking that he was finally getting comfortable with casual visitors again, until a young man, she heard him introduced as Paladar of the 11th Cave, came to visit Willemar's apprentice trader, Tivenin. When Wolf got close to him, he began to growl and bare his fangs with real menace. She had to hold him to keep him down, and even then he growled under his breath. The young man backed away in fear, and she apologized profusely. Willemar, Tivenin, and several others who were standing around watching were surprised.
"I don't know what's wrong with him. I thought he was over being defensive about his territory. Wolf doesn't usually behave like this, but he's had some trouble, and he is still getting over it," Ayla said.
"I heard he was hurt," the young man said.
Then she noticed that he wore a necklace of wolf teeth and carried a pack decorated with wolf fur.
"Can I ask where you got the wolf fur?" she asked.
"Well, most people think I went out and hunted wolf, but I'll tell you the truth. I found it. I actually found two wolves, and they must have been in a big fight because they were really torn up. One was a black female, the other, a normal gray wolf, was male. I took the teeth first, and then decided to salvage some of the fur."
"And you've got the gray male on your pack," Ayla said. "Now I think I understand. Wolf must have been in that same fight. That's how he got hurt. I knew that he'd found a friend, probably the black female. He's still young, and I don't think he was actually mating yet. He cannot yet count 2 years, but they were getting to know each other. She was either the lowest-ranked female of the local pack or a lone wolf from another pack."
"How do you know that?" Tivenin asked.
Several more people were now gathered around them, listening.
"Wolves like wolves to look like wolves. I think they can read each other's expressions better if they have normal wolf coloring. Wolves that are out of the ordinary, all black or all white or spotted, are not accepted as well. Except I was told by some Mamutoi friends that where there is a lot of snow all year long, white wolves are more normal. But the odd one, like that black wolf, is often the lowest ranked in a pack, so she probably left them and became a lone wolf. Lone wolves usually move on the fringes in between other wolves' territories, looking for a place of their own, and if they find another lone wolf, they may try to establish their own pack. My guess is that the wolves of this region were defending their territory against the two new ones," Ayla said. "And though he's big, Wolf was at a disadvantage. He only knows people. He was not raised around wolves. He would know some things just because he is a wolf, but he never had brothers and sisters or aunts and uncles, other wolves to teach him what wolves learn from each other."
"How do you know all that?" Paladar asked.
"I watched wolves for many years. When I was learning to hunt, I only hunted meat-eaters, not food animals." "I'd like to ask you a favor, Paladar," Ayla said. "Can I trade with you for that wolf fur? I think the reason Wolf is growling and threatening you is that he smells the wolf he fought with, at least one of them, and he likely killed that one. But they also killed his friend and almost killed him. It could be a danger for you to wear it around him. You should never come here with it, because I don't know what Wolf would do."
"Why don't I just give it to you?" the young man said. "It's only a scrap of fur sewn on my pack loosely. I don't want to go down in songs and stories as the man who was attacked by the wolf who loved the woman. Is it all right if I keep the teeth? They have some value."
"Yes, keep the teeth, but I'd suggest that you soak them in a light-colored, strong tea for a few days. And would you show me where you found the wolves?"
After the young man gave Ayla the offending piece of wolf fur, she gave it to Wolf. He attacked it, pounced on it, grabbed it with his teeth and shook it, trying to tear it apart. It would have been funny if the people watching hadn't been aware of how seriously he had been injured, and that his friend or potential mate had been killed. Instead, they sympathized with the wolf, attributing to him the feelings they would have experienced in a similar situation.
"I'm glad I'm not still attached to that,"
Paladar said. He and Ayla made arrangements to go to the place where he found the wolves later. They both had other plans at the moment. She wasn't sure what she expected to find. Scavengers would have disposed of everything by now. But as hurt as he was, she wondered how far Wolf had traveled to find her. After Paladar left, she thought about the songs and stories he had mentioned about the wolf who loved the woman. She had visited the camp of the storytellers and musicians. It was a lively, colorful place. Even their clothing seemed to have brighter hues. They were not all from one place. They had no stone shelter of their own, only their traveling tents and lodges. They traveled from place to place, staying for a while with one cave and then with another, but it was obvious that they all knew one another and felt a kinship. There always seemed to be children at their place. Just as they did during the rest of the year, they visited the various caves, but at their summer meeting camps rather than their shelters. They also gave general performances on the level area where the matrimonial had been held while people watched from the slope. She knew the storytellers had begun to tell stories about the animals at the ninth cave. Sometimes they were about how useful the animals could be, such as how the horses could carry heavy loads, or about Wolf helping her hunt by flushing out animals like the bird during the spear-thrower demonstration. There was a new story about how he helped her to find the new cave, but the stories of the storytellers tended to have some supernatural or magical element in them. In their stories, Wolf hunted not because she had trained him, but because they had a special understanding, which was true, they did, but that wasn't why they hunted together. The story about the wolf who loved the woman had already become one of a man who became a wolf when he visited the spirit world, then forgot to change back into a man when he returned to this world. The stories had already been told and retold many times and were on their way to being incorporated into the lore and legends of the people. Some storytellers invented other stories about animals that were kept by people, or sometimes turned them about so that people were kept by animals. They sometimes became animal spirits who helped people. They would, in all likelihood, be passed down for generations to come, keeping alive the idea that animals could be trained or tamed or kept, and not just hunted.
"Wolf will be fine with Falara," Jondalar said. "He's fine with visitors, and visitors are becoming more careful, making sure someone from the ninth cave knows they're coming. He won't suddenly turn on someone. We know why he was so aggressive toward Paladar. He's been through a difficult time, and it's bound to change him, but he's still basically the same wolf that you've loved and trained since he was a tiny pup. I don't think we should take him to the meeting, though. You know how people get excited, and it could get rancorous. Wolf would not like to see people shouting or carrying on, especially if you're there, and he thinks you're being threatened."
"Who will be there?" Ayla asked.
"Mostly the leaders and the Zelindania, and those people who have spoken out against Echazar,"
Joharan said. "That means Brukhaval, Larimar, and Morona," Ayla said. "None of them are friends."
"It gets worse," Jondalar said. "The Zelindani of the fifth cave and Madraman, his acolyte, who is certainly not my best friend, will also be there, and Danana of the 29th cave, though I'm not sure why she made complaints."
"I don't think she likes the idea of animals living around people. You remember when we stopped there on the way here? She did not want the animals to come up to her shelter," Ayla said, "though I was just as glad to camp down on the field." When they arrived at the Zelindania Lodge, the drape was opened before they could announce their presence, and they were ushered in. In a passing thought, Ayla wondered how they always seemed to know when she was coming, whether she was expected or not. "Have you met the new member of the ninth cave?" Zelindani said. She was speaking to the pleasant-looking woman with a conciliatory smile, but whom Ayla sensed had an underlying strength.
"I was at the introduction, of course, and the matrimonial, but I haven't met her personally," the woman said.
"This is Ayla of the ninth cave of the Zelindanyi,
mated to Jandalar of the Ninth Cave of the Zelindanyi, son of Marthona, former leader of the Ninth Cave, formerly Ayla of the Mamutoi, member of the Lion Camp, daughter of the Mammoth Hearth, chosen by the spirit of the cave lion and protected by the cave bear, Zelindani said, making the formal introduction. Ayla, this is Zelindani of the 29th Cave. She greeted the woman, but it came as a surprise to hear such a short formal introduction. It was, however, all that was necessary. As Zelindani, she had given up her personal identity and had become the embodiment of the 29th Cave of the Zelindanyi. Although if she had wished, the introduction could have included the person she formerly was, including her original name and all her previous ties. It just seemed unnecessary most of the time, since she was no longer that person. Ayla thought about her most recent acquisition of names and ties. She liked the way Zelindani had introduced her. She had become Ayla of the Zelindanyi and Jandalar's mate, and that came first. But she had been Ayla of the Mamutoi. She hadn't lost her connections to them, ties that meant so much to her. And she was still chosen by the spirit of the cave lion and protected by the cave bear. It pleased her that even her totem and her clan connections were included. When she first arrived and heard the long recitations of names and ties in the formal Zelindanyi introductions, Ayla wondered, very privately and only to herself, why they made such extended, almost interminable introductions, full of unknown names and connections. Why not simplify it and just say the names that people were usually called? Jandalar, Marthona, Proliva. But she had been so pleased to hear her familiar connections mentioned, she was glad now for the Zelindanyi way of including past references. She had once thought of herself as Ayla of no people, alone, with only a horse and a lion for company. Now she had ties to many people, and she was mated and expecting a child. She had one more passing thought as she turned her attention back to the people at the meeting. She wished she could include Mother of Durk of the clan in her names and ties. But considering the reason for this meeting, and recalling the night of their mating and the disruptions that Echazar's appearance had made, she wasn't sure if she could ever tell the Zelindanyi about her son Durk. When the first moved to the center of the lodge, it soon became quiet. "I will begin by saying that this meeting will not change anything. Jopleya and Echazar are mated, and only they can change that. But there seems to be an undercurrent of nasty rumors and general ill will toward them, which I think is shameful. It makes me less than proud to be a Zelindani of people who could be so heartless to two young people who are just beginning their lives together. Dalinar, the man of Jopleya's hearth, and I decided to bring this matter out in the open. If some people have sincere complaints, this is the time to make them known," the Danyer said. There was some shuffling around and avoidance of looking directly at people. It was clear that there was some embarrassment, especially among those who had listened avidly and perhaps passed on some item of malicious gossip. Even temporal and spiritual leaders were not above such human failings. No one seemed to want to broach the matter, as though it were too foolish to even bring up, and the first was ready to go on to the next reason for the meeting. Larimar could see the moment he had been agitating for was slipping away, and he had been one of the primary instigators of the discontent.
"It is true, isn't it, that Echazar's mother was a flathead?" he said.
The look the first gave him was a combination of disdain and irritation.
"He has never denied it," she said.
"That means he's a child of mixed spirits, and a child of mixed spirits is an abomination. That makes him an abomination,"
Larimar said. "Who told you that a child of mixed spirits is an abomination?" the Zelindani who was first asked. Larimar frowned and looked around.
"Everybody knows that."
"How do they know that?"
the first asked.
"Because people say so," he said.
"What people say so?" she pressed.
"Everybody," he said.
If everybody said the sun will not rise tomorrow morning, would that make it so?
The Donyer asked. Well, no, but people have always said so, Larimar said.
I think I remember hearing it from the Zelandanya,
one of the onlookers said. The first glanced around to look at the person who had spoken. She had recognized the voice. Are you saying it is a teaching of the Zelandanya that a child of mixed spirits is an abomination, Morona?
Well, yes, she said defiantly. I'm sure I heard it from the Zelandanya.
Morona, did you know that even a beautiful woman can look ugly when she lies? The first said.
Morona flushed and glared at the first with a malicious look.
Several people turned to stare at her to see if what the first said was true, and some of them agreed that the spiteful expression on the young woman's face did detract from her recognized beauty. She looked away, but mumbled under her breath,
"How would you know, you fat old woman?"
Several people nearby heard her and gasped at the insult to the first among those who served the great Earth Mother. Ayla, who was on the other side of the large room, caught her breath, too, but her hearing was almost supernaturally acute. A few others had heard Morona, among them the first, whose hearing was rather good as well. Look closely at this fat old woman, Morona, and remember that, like you, I was once considered the most beautiful woman at the summer meeting. Beauty is at most a fleeting gift. Use it wisely while you have it, young woman, because when it's gone, you will be very unhappy if you don't have something else. I have never regretted the loss of beauty, because what I have gained in knowledge and experience is much more satisfying, the one who was first said. Then she continued to the rest of the group. Morona has said, and Larimar has implied, that it is taught by the Zelandanya that children who are born as the result of the blending of spirits of one of us with one of those whom we call flatheads are abominations. In the past few days, I have gone into deep meditation and recalled all the histories and elder legends, and all the lore that is known only to the Zelandanya, to try to find out where this idea came from, because Larimar is right in one respect. It is something that everybody thinks they know. She paused and looked around the gathering. That idea has never been a teaching of the Zelandanya.
The Zelandanya had been very quiet when they saw her meditating in solitude, with her chest plaque turned around so that the carvings and decorations were hidden, and only the plain side showed, meaning she did not want to be interrupted. Now they knew why. There was an undercurrent of conversation.
But they're animals. They aren't even human.
They are related to bears.
The Zelandani of the 14th cave spoke out.
The mother is appalled by such a mixture.
They are an abomination,
Danana, the leader of the 29th cave, said.
We've always known that.
Madraman whispered to the Zelandani of the 5th cave.
Danana is right. They are half-human, half-animal, he said.
The first waited until things quieted down. Think about where you heard those things. Try to recall even one instance in the lore of the Zelandanya or the histories and elder legends of the Zelandanyi where it specifically mentions that the children of mixed spirits are abominations, or even that the flatheads are animals. I am not talking about innuendos or suggestions, but specific references, she said. She let them think for a while, then continued, In fact, if you think about it clearly, you would know that the mother would never be appalled, nor want us to think of them as abominations. They are children of the mother, just as we are. After all, who is it that selects a man's spirit to blend with the spirit of a woman? It doesn't happen often. We don't associate much with flatheads. But if the mother sometimes decides to create a new life by blending the elan of a flathead with the elan of a Zelandanyi, that is her choice. It is not for her children to disparage those offspring. The great Earth Mother decided to create them, perhaps for a special reason. Echazar is not an abomination. Echazar is born of woman, as we all are. The fact that his mother was a woman of the clan doesn't make him less a child of the Great Mother. If he and Joplea have chosen each other, then Donnie is pleased, and we should be too. There was another commotion, but the first heard no actual denials and decided to move on. The other reason for having this gather is that Joharan wants to talk about the ones we call flatheads. But first, I think you should learn more about them from someone who can speak from experience. Ayla was raised by the ones we know as flatheads, but that she knows as people of the clan. Ayla, will you come here and tell us about them? Ayla got up and walked toward the first. Her stomach was queasy and her mouth felt dry. She wasn't used to speaking formally to a group of people, and she didn't know where to start. So she just began where her memories began.
I was a 5 year, I think, as close as I can guess, when I lost the family I was born to. I don't remember most of this very well, but I think it was an earthquake that took them. I dream about it sometimes. I guess I wandered alone for a while. I'm sure I didn't know where to go or what to do. I don't know how long I had been alone when I was chased by a cave lion. I think I hid in a small cave, very small, because a cave lion reached in to try to get me and scratched my leg. I still have the scars, 4 lines from his claws on my leg. My earliest real memory is opening my eyes and seeing Issa, a woman of those you would call flatheads. I remember screaming at the sight of her. Her response was to hold me in her arms until I quieted.
People were immediately caught up in the story of an orphaned girl who could count only 5 years. She explained that the home of the clan that found her had been destroyed by the same earthquake, and they were looking for a new one when they came across her. She told them that they knew she was not clan, but one of the others, the word they used for people like her. And she talked about being adopted by the medicine woman of Brun's clan and her brother, Kreb, who was a great Mogur, which was like a Zelandani. As she continued, she forgot about her nervousness and just spoke naturally, with all of the emotion and genuine feelings about her life with the people who called themselves the Clan of the Cave Bear. She didn't hold back anything, not the difficulties she had with Braud, who was the son of the mate of the leader, Brun, or her joy in learning medicine from Issa. She talked about her love for Kreb and Issa and her clan sister, Uba, and about her curiosity when she picked up the sling for the first time. She told how she taught herself to use it, and several years later, the consequences for doing so. She hesitated only when it came to talking about her son. For all the first's logical and high-minded argument about the clan being children of the mother, too, she could tell from the expressions and body language of several people, especially those who had made objections to Echazar mating Joplea, that their feelings had not changed. They had just decided that it might be best to keep them to themselves for the time being. Ayla thought it might be best to refrain from mentioning, too. She told him about being forced to leave the clan when Braud became leader, and though she tried to explain what a death curse was, she didn't think they fully understood the real power of its coercive force. It did literally cause the death of individual members of the clan if they had no place to go and no one, not even their dearest loved ones, would acknowledge that they even existed. She spoke only briefly about her time in the valley, but talked in more detail about Rydag, the mixed child that was adopted by Nezi, the mate of the headman of the lion camp.
Unlike Echazar, he did not have the strength of the clan, and he was weak internally, but like the clan, he could not make certain sounds. I taught him and Nezi, and then the rest of the lion camp and Jandalar, to communicate with hand signs. It made Nezi very happy the first time he called her mother,
Ayla ended. Then Jandalar came forward and told the story of how he and his brother Thonolin met some men of the clan shortly after they got across the plateau glacier on the highland to the east. Then he told the funny story on himself about catching only half a fish because he shared the other half with a young man of the clan. He also explained the circumstances that led to their spending a few nights with the clan couple Guban and Yorga, and of talking to them in the sign language Ayla had taught him.
"If there is one thing I learned on my journey,"
Jandalar said,
"it is that the ones we have always called flatheads are people, intelligent people. They are no more animals than you or me. Their ways may be different, their intelligence may even be different, but it is not less, it is just different. There are some things we can do that they can't, but there are also some things they can do that we can't."
Then Joharan stood up and talked about his concerns and working out new ways to deal with them. Finally, Willemar talked about the possibility of trading with them. Afterwards, there were many questions, and the discussion went on for a long time. It was a revelation to the Zelandanya and the Zelandanyi leaders. Some found it difficult to believe, but most listened with an open mind. It seemed obvious that Ayla's story was true. Not even the best storyteller could have made up a tale that was so convincing. And it revealed the clan as humane, even if some didn't want to believe they were human. Nothing was resolved, but it gave everyone something to think about. The first stood then to end the meeting.
"I think we have all learned some things of importance," she said. "I appreciate Ayla's willingness to come here and talk to us so freely about her unusual experiences. She has given us a rare insight into the life of people who may be strange, but who were willing to take in a child they knew was different, and treat her as one of their own. Some of us have felt fear if we happened to see a flathead when we were out hunting or collecting something. It seems that fear is misplaced if they were willing to take in someone who is lost and alone."
"Do you think that means that they took in that woman from the 9th cave who was lost some time ago?"
said the white-haired Zelandani of the 19th cave.
"If I recall correctly, she was pregnant when she returned. The mother may have decided to bless her when she was with the Flatheads and used the spirit of one of them to..."
"No, that's not true. My mother was not an abomination,"
Brukhaval cried out.
"That's right. Your mother was not an abomination," Ayla said. "That's what we've been trying to say. None of those with mixed spirits is an abomination."
"My mother was not of mixed spirits," he said. "That's why she was not an abomination."
He looked at her with such loathing, Ayla had to turn her head aside to avoid the force of his glare. Then he stalked out. There were no more discussions. People got up and started leaving. On the way out, the one who was first noticed Morona looking at her in a rude and insolent way. Then she overheard Larimar talking with Zelandani of the 5th cave and his acolyte, Madriman.
"How can Jandalar's hearth be among the first?" he asked. "The excuse was that she had such a high ranking among the Mamutoi, the people she supposedly came from, that it shouldn't be lowered here. But she doesn't even know what people she was actually born to. If she was raised by flatheads, then she's more flathead than Mamutoi. Tell me what rank a flathead has. She should have been last, but now she's among the first. I don't think it's right."
After the long and grueling session, which ended with such a vehement outburst, Ayla felt wrung out. She supposed it must be disturbing for people to suddenly learn that creatures they had thought of as animals were actually thinking, caring people. It was a radical change, and change never came easy. But Brukhaval's reaction was irrational, and his glare so full of malice he scared her. Jandalar suggested they get the horses and go for a ride to get away from everyone and relax after the